All right, folks, welcome to another On Par Winner Podcast. Pleased to be joined by my main man, Kieran Clark. How we doing, Kieran?
I'm good, Anthony. Thanks for having me on, as always. And, you know, believe it or not today, Anthony, we actually have some sunshine in Scotland. It's incredible. Wow. You know, people are throwing spears at the sky, wondering what that big yellow thing is in the air, but it's actually the sun. I can't believe it.
That big yellow thing in the sky doing you justice.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah, we...
I'm looking at my sunglasses and having to put the cream on my face because, you know, sunshine is such a rarity this winter in Scotland. So, actually, who knows? Maybe there'll even be some golf coming soon for us. So, it's you know, spring's coming.
All right. Don't rub it in. We've gotten snowstorm after snowstorm. We had another...
Have you really? Oh, no.
Yeah, we had another surprise storm on Monday. Most of the schools on the island were shut down. So,
right.
You know, we're in the bit of winter. As long as it has, you know, it stayed off for a while, but now it's back on for sure. And if the 48 inches wasn't enough, you know, 2 weeks ago, we certainly got a fair bit of it. It keeps on coming. So winter's here. We won't see the grass for quite some time. In the meantime, we'll just have to keep doing winter podcasts and talk golf.
Yep, absolutely. And actually, it's perfect timing then that you can sit at home on Saturday and watch the outstanding broadcast from Pebble Beach from watching Chris Berman and all these randoms hacking around Pebble Beach in the perfect sunshine.
Right.
Only to be even more envious.
We'll get to your favorite tournament of the year in a second. All right,
I can't wait to talk about that.
let's start with Danny Willett and his tournament win at the Dubai Desert Classic. A nice 15-footer, showing some nerves of steel, edging out Rafa Cabrera-Bello and Andy Sullivan. Talk a little bit about Danny Willett. It strikes me as a bit of a character. You know him a little bit better on your side of the pond, but you know, he seems like a bit of a character. I kind of like him. Kind of a high energy guy.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Ian Poulter, and I think perhaps we almost saw that with the kind of the edge to his game there when he held that great putt, made that fantastic up and down to win the tournament. And obviously now, you know, he's 28, he has a kind of a recurring back problem, which is a little bit troublesome, I think, for a player who's obviously so young. You know, that's the thing to look out for in the future, but, you know, he's continually improved in recent years. Obviously, he was a really good amateur player, he came on the tour quite young, didn't quite get the consistency early on, but really since then, the last two or three years, he's really kicked on. He's now in the world's top 20. He's almost certainly going to be on the Ryder Cup team this September. And I tell you what, he's sort of the, as you said there, kind of alluded to there, he's the right sort of personality, you think, for the Ryder Cup team. So, a great win for him. Biggest win of his career so far. And obviously for last year as well, he had that great run in the match play in California. So he can do it in the big events as well. Had a contender in the Open, of course, at St. Andrews. So I think Danny's a fantastic player. And if he stays fit, he'll become more consistent, and we'll see him in the Ryder Cup this September. But obviously a great win for him, ahead of another Englishman, of course, and Andy Sullivan is now a young guy who's impressing as well in the past year.
Yeah, he's had a couple of nice finishes the last couple of tournaments, Andy Sullivan, huh?
Yeah. Well, obviously, he won three times last year.
Right.
And for me, I know that Rory won the race to Dubai and was named Player of the Year for the European Tour. But for me, given that Andy Sullivan played week in and week out on the Tour last year, won three regular events in the European Tour, and also, of course, pushed Rory right to the end of the final event in the Tour Championship in Dubai last November, I think Andy Sullivan, for me, was actually the best player on the European Tour last year. You know, he had a real kind of breakthrough season, and he's certainly carrying on this year. And like Danny Willett, I think Andy Sullivan could well be on the Ryder Cup team as well. And two young English guys, you know, Sullivan in particular is a very sort of lively and bubbly personality. And again, that will really suit a team room. So I think both of those guys will be real assets for Darren Clark when September comes.
What do you think of, just to jump off the young train for a second, I was just thinking about Lee Westwood and his circumstances domestically, mm-hmm. and whatnot, and that's not obviously for discussion here, but I'm just curious of your thoughts on his prospects coming into this year.
Well, obviously, I think Lee's trying to just sort of scrub out last year. Last year was a bad year, obviously, on and off the golf course. There was a lot of things going away from the game, and that affects you on course as well. And really, it's a frustrating few years for him career-wise. Obviously, he moved to Florida two or three years ago to try and get that kind of all-round year practice that you can't really get in England, and hoping that would actually push on his career and give him maybe a chance to win a major championship as he enters his early 40s. Hasn't happened. His game's declined. And people always comment on his putting. He's now using kind of a counterbalance putter, and it's more his long game that's declined in recent times. Of course, he was with Pete Cowan a number of years ago, left him, and... his long game declined since then. So Weston, for me, you know, he's such a good player for so long, but the question is whether he has the, not so much the drive, but just the juice left to really kick on, because these young guys, the Sullivans, the Willetts, you know, they're now taking that mantle. Fitzpatrick, as young English guys, the likes of, you know, Donald and Westwood and Poulter, you know, they're kind of on the decline. Westwood, perhaps the most alarming of them. But at the same time, if he can show some sort of form, I certainly think that Darren Clarke would put him on the team in September. But at the same time, Westwood's quickly becoming yesterday's man, which is a shame to see, because, you know, I like Lee Westwood. I think he's a good character. And again, he's a fantastic player. But who knows, maybe he'll just have that out of nowhere Darren Clarke Open Championship win that he had a few years ago. But I think Lee's best days are well behind him now, unfortunately. And I'm not sure we'll ever see him get back to anything like he was maybe 5-6 years ago when he was, of course, world number one.
Yeah, you know, obviously it's a painful circumstance that he's dealing with, and there's obviously no good time for it. But what the timing, really, when you think about it, couldn't have been worse, considering here's a guy, like you said, late in his career, and it seems like, you know, he's doing everything that he needs to do to win a major championship and move his family and everything, you know, like you said, getting on in his years a bit long in the tooth. And then for this to come, the timing just could not have been worse. And like I said, there's no good time for it, and nobody likes to see a family break up. But in terms of you know, everything he was doing to mobilize his game and the main, you know, to be on the mainland and this side of the water hazard, if you will, it just seems like what a terrible timing, career-wise, personally-wise, but just the timing in terms of his career, like you said, this makes it all the more difficult to compete with the youngsters, like you said, like the Danny Willetts, like the Fitzpatricks, like the Rorys, these newfound, you know, emerging stars on the European tour. You know, just like I said, timing could not have been worse career-wise for him.
Oh, definitely, and that's right. And obviously, in his early 40s, and even actually, it really happened in sort of the heart of last year. I think it was June time last year when it all kind of came out. So it was right in the heart of the season, in amongst the majors, the US Open, the Open, of course, and it came at the wrong time in so many ways. And actually, it's never a good time for these sorts of things to happen, of course. But the question is for him now. It's sort of a fresh start. It's easy to say it's sort of had a set, you know, new year, fresh start and all that, but obviously with that baggage behind you, that emotional baggage, it's hard. And the game's getting harder and harder. They can keep up with these young guys. And when things are going not your way away from the course and times are tough, it can be hard to motivate yourself at times. You know, he's also been quite a highly motivated character. You know, Lee came back after, remember, of course, you know, maybe 2003, he almost fell out of the game entirely. He was down to 300 in the world, and he bounced back from that and became world number one. So he's come through hard times before. You know, that's very true. But, of course, it's hard to do it more than once, and I'm not sure he will.
It's not only harder to do more than once, but it's harder to do it at age 40.
And
not that, you know, we understand, those of us who are closer to the game than others, how fragile the game is mentally for you. And so to be dealing with, you know, not, you know, to not be near your kids and to, you know, to deal with all that uprooting of them and having to deal with that, I just can't imagine. I don't care if you're the top 1% of the golfers in the world. It's still, it can wreak havoc on you.
Yeah, and it reminds us, you know, we almost think these guys, we watch them on TV and so on, and they're rich and they're successful, living the most kind of dream lifestyle, traveling the world, playing golf at the highest level. But, you know, they're human beings, and like any human being, no matter what you do in life, you know, life can bite you really hard. And when that happens, it can be hard to do what you do to the same standard anywhere near it. And it's the same for a guy working in a shop or whatever, driving a bus, than it is a guy playing in the PGA Tour. So for Westwood, obviously, we touched on there, time of his life, it's a hard one for him to bounce back from. But you know what? Say, he's done it. He's came back from, you know, bad times before, obviously not bad times away from the game, but bad times on course. So he has got a resilience there. And but again, as you say, with the kids being away from him now, and he's trying to balance his life from traveling, playing the game, practicing, seeing his kids, it's just a hard balance at the best of times for these guys, let alone when your family's broken up. So it's a tough one for him to handle, and certainly have more sympathy for him and his family.
Yeah, and coming from peering in from the insular world that we do, it seems to me all indications seem to be he's a pretty good guy, and we're rooting for him, and hopefully he can get that, you know, domestic situation sorted out, and hopefully he'll be on to better days, because, like I said, he's always seemed to be like a good guy and a good quote and an honest guy and an insightful guy. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure the world of golf is rooting for him and his family and get that all sorted out. let's move things to this side of the pond. And, you know, just to jump back to the Farmers, it was a little bit rain delay and Monday finish at the Farmers. But I will say I did, not to say I told you so, but I did say in our first podcast that, you know, the Brent Snedekers of the world would have something to say about the Big Four.
Yes,
and, and so
yes, you can feel a little bit smug about that.
I could, and don't mind if I do. And,
you're entitled to feel smug if you want. And look, if I was in your position, I would feel smug right now as well. But you were right, you know, Snedeker played great. And I tell you what, that 69 shot on a Sunday in horrendous wind conditions, you know, that will go down. If there's a better round this year on any, in any tournament, I can't wait to see it, because it was an incredible round to be. I think it was 8 shots better than actually the average of the whole field that day. So it was an incredible round. Obviously, one event for even hitting a shot on the Monday, but he deserved it. Because I think in the end, you know, for me, Snedeker, Tom Watson is his hero growing up. And for me, Snedeker embodies the best sort of attributes of Tom Watson in terms of he plays really quickly, he's got a brisk pace to him, he plays the game in the right way. And he also has a really good attitude where he embraces tough conditions, like Watson did, of course, in all those Open Championships he won through the years. So for me, Snedeker embodies the best of Watson. And, you know, in Brant, he had a consistent start to the year. And he's one of these guys who could pop up and win a major at any point, and not even surprises, because he's always been there, but we kind of overlook him at times. I don't know why. He's a nice guy, but he's almost not fashionable as such, but he's a very good player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that is, you know, he had so much success 2 years ago, and I just think he needed to recalibrate and get, you know, accustomed to whatever new distractions come that way, and financially. And then, of course, when you have so much success, like as he did, I think, you know, that he's probably had more opportunities for his off days to be taken up by outings, corporate outings, and, you know, who knows what, you know, what people are paying to have him come in and play for, you know, or do a clinic or whatever the case may be. And it probably just took a year or so for him to sort of get back to figuring out what works best for him.
Yeah, that's happened to a lot of players through the years, where you actually, where a player who's he's there, he's a successful player, he makes a tight 11 for himself, but then he has a great year and suddenly catapulted into the spotlight because he won the FedEx Cup and stuff like that. And really, you know, it's when, you know, there's so much to do, so many distractions, as you say, it's easy to take your eye off the ball and sort of get your head sort of reorganized into facing you know, in the end, you're still playing golf professionally, have the practicing routine and so on. It's hard to get back into that. But Snedeker, for me, he's someone who has he's got a great attitude. He enjoys the game. He enjoys getting out there competing. And I think he has a really good work ethic. And I enjoy watching, because I say, you know, he plays the game to a really good pace. You know, he gets up there, he hits it, that's it. And even his putting stroke has a kind of old-fashioned sort of Tom Watson pop stroke. And you don't see that very often nowadays.
No, definitely.
But it works for him. But, you know, Snedeker's someone who, again, he's not even that old, really. He's only mid-30s, and even though we're talking about young guys all the time at the moment, obviously, for obvious reasons, but, you know, there's still some of these older guys, as you say, the guys in their mid-30s, who Justin Roses, Brant Snedekers, who can go out there and can still compete at the highest level and still win these things. And I think Snedeker's someone who, you know, look at Trudon this year for the Open Championship. Obviously, he contended, I think it was at World 11 a few years ago. Maybe he should have won that, actually, when, of course, Ernie Els came through and beat Adam Scott. But he's a guy who maybe at Trudon, where it seems that the Americans win every single time at Trudon, maybe Snedeker will follow in the footsteps of Tom Watson and actually lift the claret jug at Royal Trudon this July. We'll have to wait and see.
That would be fantastic. That would be a fun win. That's a good win in my book. Not that there's really a bad win, but that would be a popular win, I would suppose, and I could imagine. And like you said, I mean, just think about $10 million. That's quite the win. That's quite the windfall for anybody. And that, you know, very 10 million reasons why you could take your eye off the ball.
Well, look, Anthony, I don't know about you, but if I won $10 million, actually, if I won $1 million, even $10,000, my eye would be way off the ball all the time. So I'd probably lose my mind with that sort of money. So it's probably for the best I never actually get that sort of money. But for these guys, even though they're all quite wealthy as it is, but a big windfall like that's going to, you know, really, that's going to change your life, even if you're a rich guy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So then let's move on. Then we had what they call the Bill is the greatest show on turf, and sort of a wild finish to the Phoenix. You know, out in Phoenix, and I'm just sort of, you know, I feel for, I mean, I'm happy for Matsuyama, two-time winner now, but, you know, how do you not feel for Ricky Fowler? And, you know, you could argue that, he did it to himself. But, you know, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback, but I still don't understand. You know, we just had the Super Bowl here, and there's a lot of people saying, you know, why didn't Carolina do this and why didn't Carolina do that? And, you know, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff to pro football that you don't know about, that, and there are reasons why people do the things that they do. But when you look at golf, you know, that's I just don't understand it, and I just can't imagine what the you know what was going through his head, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the end, it's always hard to second guess these guys. Now, yeah. Also a bit foolish doing that, given how good they are, what they do.
Sure.
But for me, he made the wrong mistake on the 17th. You know, taking driver off that tee, you know, a short par four, drivable par four. And in the end, he hit the best drive of his life. You know, he absolutely, it was absolutely perfect. He had the perfect shot, just at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And in the end, that hole was 305 to the front of the green. And he hits it in the end, 358 yards, through the green into the water. Makes bogey, drops a shot, Matsuyama birdies, and they're tied going up the last. So if he takes Freewood, of course, which of course he did do in the end in the playoff, and then also found the water, apparently for the ninth time in his career on that hole, which I think is incredible. That hole seems to be his nemesis. But for me, he healthily found the water twice, but it's two different things. The first time with the driver, he took the wrong club. But in the end, Phoenix is at a higher altitude. The adrenaline's flowing. On the 15th, indeed, he hit a drive 344. So he already had just fresh memory of hitting a drive that was clearly too far for that hole. So he should have taken Freewood there, or even just laid up short of the bunker and wedged it in. At worst, you make four, maybe even three. But in the playoff, when he took the Freewood, it was the right club to take, but he pulled it left. So that was a case of a bad right decision, bad shot. In the first instance, it was the wrong decision, but a very good shot in the end, but obviously the wrong time for it.
Yeah.
But Matsuyama, you know, credit to him, you know, he had two birdies there, 17, 18, and the playoff, of course, is back and forth, really entertaining stuff. It was a great watch. And I think Matsuyama, we talk about young guys, I said earlier, but, you know, Dave, Rory, Spieth, Fowler, Matsuyama has sort of been overlooked here, but in terms of a ball striker, I'm not sure there are many, maybe five better players, tee the green, than Hideki Matsuyama consistently. He's a real high-quality player. And I think people now will start taking notice of that and realize maybe this guy could actually become Japan's first major winner.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit too slow for my taste, to be honest with you, although, he, like you said, he's a tremendous ball striker. But just getting back to Ricky Fowler, to me, you know, I disagree a little bit. I think that tournament, you know, was a real problem for him in regulation. See, I don't think driver or three wood is the right shot. I know he took three wood. If I remember correctly, he didn't hit three wood the first time around. He didn't give that a go because he wanted to take the bunker out of play. But to me, if you have the lead going to 17. Then I'm taking the three wood out. I'm taking the driver out of play. I'm taking the three wood out of play, and I'm laying up even short of that bunker. So, you know, what's the difference? You're playing to the middle of the green anyway. The pressure's on Matsuyama. Okay, now in the playoff, I get it. Okay, so now he learned his mistake. He's going with a three wood, but he doesn't have to learn from that mistake if he just lays up with an iron on a drivable par four. I mean, you know, you gotta set yourself up for success, and I don't see the benefit or the logic to me in playing three wood or driver. You know, I'm taking everything out of play. I'm hitting, even if I have to hit a seven iron in, which is probably not even the case for him, into the green. I'm still, you know, I'll do that rather than come near anything that's going to go in the water. And so I just, to me, that's where the tournament went wrong for him. And he, you know, and then it becomes like anybody else, like we're talking about, a fragile state mentally. Now you're like, you know, what am I going to do? And then he goes to the three wood, and then, of course, he yanks that in the water. So to me, a comedy of errors for Ricky Fowler. I mean, I like the kid. He's great for the game. But it all went wrong for him in regulation, and then it was at that point he set himself up for failure for the to me mentally for the playoff.
No, I agree with that. I think in the end, taking the driver in regulation on 17 when you're two shots ahead, that was a shot you take on when you're two shots behind.
Of course.
You really, and even then it's too much probably.
Right.
Given how far I hit the driver in the previous hole, the 15th hole. But for me, as you say there, the bunker was 265. The hole, it was 305 to the front. So he hits it maybe 220, takes maybe a you know, 3-4 iron really lays up there. He's going to have a wedge into the green.
Right.
And Ricky Fowler's wedge game is very good. And he's going to have, at worst, a 4, if not a 3. And he does that. Matsuyama's not even in the picture at this point. So,
exactly.
As you say, a wrong decision there. Maybe he was caught up in the moment because I think he was pumped up. You know, he obviously was hitting the ball really well. Had his grandparents there watching him. He was quite emotional about that, I think, after the event, losing it, of course, in the circumstances that he did. But certainly, it is a missed opportunity. And the thing is, recently, Fowler in the past year has been taking his opportunities. You know, he's become almost an opportunity taker, whether it be at Sawgrass or the Scottish Open, of course, recently in Abu Dhabi, where he actually comes through and makes the right decisions and hits the right shots at the right moment and actually snatches the victory. And that's become almost a trademark of his game. And he made a mistake on Sunday there at Phoenix, and that one that cost him in the end.
Yep.
But I think in the end, for him, he'll recover from that. He'll move on. He'll realise himself. He's quite an analytical guy in his own way, and he knows fine well what he did there. And but I agree with you. I think he made the wrong decision. And even in the playoff, you know, the Freewood there in that situation was probably the right club, I think, in the playoff. But again, he had a poor shot, and that's why he brought the water into play. But the driver, in any situation, really was a no-go shot, and it was crazy for him to even take that on, and particularly in that position.
Yeah.
But that said, Matsuyama, I think, you know, the way he played in the playoff as well, you know, he even though Felder sort of lost it, I think Matsuyama maybe even forced some mistakes out of him as well. He played tremendously in those final few holes, and as I say, I think he's a player who is going to really carry on this year. And potentially, I'd say at some point, maybe sneak ahead of the big 3 or 4, as we're calling them, and actually win one of these majors. Cause I think, and even though Matsuyama, I think you're right in saying that he is very slow, I think he's very mechanical with his putting, maybe overly slow compared to Fowler, who's obviously really smooth and carefree with it seems. But here's a good question for you. Someone asked me recently and said, well, the question's always been, what would you rather have, Rory's driving or Jordan's putting? But for me, I think that actually you can make a convincing case that in many ways, Ricky Fowler might even be a better putter than Jordan Spieth. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think about that?
You know, I would have to see more from... I'd have to see more from Ricky in the bigger spot doing that.
Sure.
I totally get what you're saying, and I like the idea of what you're saying. I like that X Games mentality of Ricky Fowler. I do. I think... That benefits him so much, and I you know, it's hard to make those, to connect those dots, but you know, with these kids, when you play you know, non-traditional sports like that, when you're doing motocross, when you do, you know, the fear of failure, you know, the courage it takes to do those things where you know that injury is right around the corner. I mean, at any minute, I just think there's a certain toughness to him, and I think that it sort of you know, his persona has grown organically out of that, and I love him. But I would have to see I'd have to see more of him in the big spot for me to say I would take his putting over Jordan Spieth, who's done it. I mean, that putt on what was it, the par 3 17th on the putt for par Chambers Bay. I mean, that was a crazy putt that he had to make for par just to get, you know, give him a chance back on 18. It was you know, to keep himself in it without dropping the shot before going to 18 and then having to force himself into, you know, whatever the case may be, or change his mindset. But, you know, that was a crazy downhill sliding fast putt on greens, like you said, was, you know, cauliflower, if you know, that Rory called. So, not to belabor a point, I just have to see more of Ricky. But I do know what you're saying, and it seems like, and I feel like I'd have to be, you know, see more from him to be convinced of it. And perhaps he wins, like you said, you know, like last year, and then Abu Dhabi this year, and then he comes away with this win here. You know, then that, you know, that changes things a little bit. But Phoenix is not Chambers Bay, so to speak, and Abu Dhabi is not the Masters, or you know, or the Open Championship or anything like that. So I'd have to see more from that. What did you make of Bubba and his comments? It seems like Bubba does it again. Bubba talks, Bubba goes home, gets yelled at by his wife, and Bubba comes back and apologizes. It's just Bubba being Bubba, I guess, you know?
Yeah, but I think that's it. You know, it's just Bubba being Bubba. You know, he also said a few different things in the past that have been not necessarily what you'd expect from a high-ranking tournament professional to say. There's a fine line between a player... being honest and then just being stupid. And I think Bubba is someone who we want to see these guys come out and be honest, be refreshingly so, and that's what we want to see, you guys who come out and don't throw cliches at you and just give the PR spiel that many players have done in the past and continue to do so, perhaps even more so now than ever before. And Bubba's maybe not one of those guys, and that in its own way is quite refreshing, but at times he says the wrong thing, and it gives the wrong impression of him and actually plays up kind of the worst impression we have of him as being this kind of whiny guy who doesn't really want to be out there at times. And we've seen that before and in the past. And he keeps, every so often when you think he's actually maybe moved on from that, something like that happens and he brings it up again. And that seems to be a recurring theme with Bubba. And it's a shame because I love watching him play. I think he's such an imaginative, almost an extraordinary player, the way he plays the game. And it's, especially in this day and age where there's less sort of, to quote one of our obviously mutual friend John Huggins, it's like the artistry of it, you know, it's that sort of thing as well. The game lacks that now. He does have that. He's maybe the best embodiment of that in the game today. And but again, he says the wrong thing. Actually, for me, Bubba, what I noticed more than anything else at Phoenix last week was actually how he went out to watch Ricky Ferland, the player, and I thought it was a great touch out there watching his good friend. And I must say another thing, did you see Bubba's T-shirt and the shorts he was wearing? I was transfixed by his legs, not in a good way. They looked terrible. They looked like they were matchsticks. I couldn't believe it. And I was instantly reminded of this one thing in Scotland we have. I'm not sure if you have it over there or anything quite like it, but this thing we have here in these really bad sort of takeaway restaurants where a doner kebab, which sits in a kind of a skewer and it turns around in circles, around all the time. His legs looked a bit like that. That was not a great image to have. But, you know, at least he was out there supporting his pal, and that's fine. But I say, Bubba, you know, he does the wrong thing at times. Here's an interesting thing as well, actually. I noticed this week at Pebble Beach, he's playing with Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
You know, Marky Mark of the old adverts and, of course, some films down the years. Actually, Mark Wahlberg's in one of my favourite films of all time, Boogie Nights. So an interesting partnership there this week at Pebble, and Bubba and Mark Wahlberg. We'll see what conversations they'll have. It should be fun to follow.
I can't imagine Mark Wahlberg is so thrilled to be. I mean, I don't know if I want to walk around with Bubba Watson for 4 hours.
Short straw there, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, that's the way I look at it. And, you know, just getting back to Bubba at Phoenix, I just, you know, I fear that, I don't really care, to be honest with you, but it seems like maybe that's a better way, that people are starting, you know, more and more people are going to see what I think a lot of people inside the ropes have long suspected and known about Bubba. And that's not a good thing for him or his sponsors. And you know, these guys, some of these guys are young. They have to grow up in front of the world, but he better do it quickly, because he's just one more, poor comment, like you said, stupid comment, away from really doing some damage to himself. I mean,
yeah, but here's the thing, Anthony, you're right, and it's Bubba as well. You know, he's not a kid. You know,
no.
He's a fully grown man. He's in his late 30s now. I think he's 37. So
right.
You know, he's not a young guy. If a kid's maybe 17 or 18, new on the tour, then maybe you can kind of, like Ryan Ruffles recently, of course, sort of irked Phil Mickelson by those comments about the betting match they had recently.
Right.
You know, a young kid like that, maybe you can understand that. But
yep.
A guy that's 37, be on the tour now for over a decade, you know, he should know better than that.
Yeah, he's just got to grow up. I don't know what goes through his mind.
Not very much, I don't think. That's the trouble.
No. And then what does come out is almost absurd. So I don't get.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I don't know. He's a strange bird, that's for sure. And I just, like I said, just Bubba being Bubba, and like I said, people starting to see, and you know, every time he opens his mouth, it's another opportunity for people to see what I think he really is. And it's a shame because, like you said, he's such a genius with the golf clubs, you're almost distracted by it by his mouth. And so it's a bit of a travesty. Moving on from the greatest show on turf to maybe the worst show on turf. Pebble Beach. I will say I was happy to see the new recontoured and the 17th brought to life again. I will say that that's been a bonus. Watching a little bit of the pro-am there the other day. But my question for you is, since we're close to the end here, is who would you play with? And if you could bring your own celebrity, who would you bring if you're not content with the current offering?
Oh my goodness! Well, that's a wonderful question. Who would I play with?
Let's assume
a really controversial selection.
But
here,
hold on. Let's assume.
Slap your face.
wait.
I'm going to be honest here, and I'm going to say that if I could choose any sort of big personality in the world right now to play golf with, it's got to be Donald Trump.
Oh my God!
It has to be. I want to find out how that guy ticks, what goes through his head. I would love to get that insight. He's a man of the moment, of course. I don't agree with him or
I don't like him
in any way, but I think he looks ridiculous. But at the same time, for 18 holes, a few hours at Pebble Beach, no, I would play with a dog. I'm sorry.
If we get disconnected, it's not an accident. All right? I'm just telling you that right now. No, I'm just... I can't imagine playing 4 hours or 5 hours or 6 hours with a person who's going to tell me how great he is and all the great things they're going to do that are, he's talk about I'm not saying he's totally disconnected from reality, but his certainly on-air personality seems to be disconnected.
Oh, yeah. But that's the thing. I would love to get up close to that, not because I would necessarily enjoy his company, but I would find it fascinating in its own way to see such an egomaniac that up close. So as I say, and of course, Donald likes to boast about how great he is at golf, where he's what is it, 14 club championships he's won. He's a bit like what's his name, King John Eel,
North Korea, exactly.
Shot, whatever it was, 35 under par in his first ever round of golf. So he's a bit like that kind of guy. But I'd be fascinated to sort of tap into that personality and just see if you experience it, experience the Donald in real life. It would be incredible.
I
know obviously people are going to shout at me and cross their head at me and slap their face and face palms and whatever else, but I'm telling you, I would love to spend 4 hours with a Donald just to see what keeps that guy ticking.
Oh, that's an unbelievable answer. I'm shocked.
So,
Anthony, what about you
then? I'm assuming you're not going to pick Donald Trump, so what about you?
We're assuming that Stuart Armstrong is not available. Are we correct on that?
He's in Dubai right now. I'm afraid. Okay. He can't make it.
Well, he can't make it. So, I mean, I don't know. I think I'd rather play with Jabba the Hutt than play with Donald Trump. But
there's a striking resemblance between them, isn't there? So. Actually, Jabba has better hair, doesn't he? That's probably why he's better.
He does. I don't know if I think if I was bringing a celebrity per se, not a pro golfer, if I'm bringing my own celebrity, I think I'm bringing somebody like, I might bring the Godfather. I might bring the Godfather, the man himself. I think playing around with, the legendary Robert De Niro might be a fascinating. I mean, I know that, he has nothing to do with golf, but I mean, talk about the things that you could talk about from Taxi Driver to The Godfather.
I agree. But what about hopefully not Dirty Grandpa or Meet the Fockers or anything?
No. We'll just skip right over those.
So you mean sort of pre-1997 Robert De Niro?
Yeah,
sort of fell apart.
Yeah, not Meet the Fockers Robert De Niro. I definitely don't want that guy. Oh, God. I feel like he's just a guy. I feel like he's just working to just work, I think, making some of these movies. Dirty Grandpa or whatever he's taking. Maybe he's got too much time on his hands or not enough. I don't know. But I just think it would be a fascinating to get all those sort of behind the scenes discussions with him. An extraordinary actor. I know it's not probably the grand answer you're probably looking for, but I just feel like.
I love it. I'm beginning to reconsider my Donald Trump.
This recording is already final. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I can't even bring Al Pacino as like a third guy in the group, maybe. No,
there's no saving you. There's no saving you now. You have to live with this now. I can't wait for Twitter to get a hold of you.
That's what I deserve, isn't it?
So it's unbelievable.
I brought it on myself. I brought it on myself.
Well, Donald Trump might be good for our ratings, too. Who knows? But But that that does it for this week's edition of the On Par Winner podcast with Kieran Clark from GolfShake.com and at Kieran Golf on Twitter. Kieran, always a pleasure, and thank you for your thoughts, if not for for most of your thoughts, maybe not the end. But,
well, thank you. It's been a pleasure as always.
Absolutely. All right, that's it, folks. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to having you again. Join us again next week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Joining me is Kieran Clark. Thank you, folks.